but there are some issues that are on the forefront of your mind, and that's what we're going to talk about. Our first panelist, it's a pleasure for me to introduce. He is a gentleman that is an eighth generation farmer. This is weird. All eight generations are still farming. Okay, maybe not. I promise the jokes will get better. He doesn't just grow the commodity that he represents. He also grows sorghum and wheat and gar, where we may talk about that if you don't know what that is. He was involved with the Soybean Association first in 2006 when he was with the Texas Soybean Board. And since 2010, he's been Texas representative on the American Soybean Association. He's a graduate of the Tarleton State University and Texas Tech, and has a bachelor's and a master's in economics from those two universities. He is married. He has three children. Please welcome to the stage the president of the American Soybean Association, Mr. Wade Cowan.
Are you ready?
Sit down.
I hate to sit down.
You brought your fan club with you, I see.
They're very vocal, I guess. Yeah.
Very vocal and local. I see this. Your family here. There's a lot of families here. But I was intrigued. You had a BS and MS both from two universities, so you're smart. Is what you're saying?
No, I'm saying I survived.
You survived. Do you ever have a 4.0?
One time.
What was it? Blood alcohol?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what that, yeah. Me too. I did that. That's how I got my 4.0 in college. All right, so Wade, let's talk your commodity group here just a little bit. A lot of people know probably in this room that most of soybean meal, I don't know, it's 90%+ or whatever, goes into livestock feed. Right. Do you see that as possibly an angle or an avenue, a conduit, if you will, where we could use an industry like that to bring unity among all the commodity groups?
Well, we've got to do that. We've just got to do that. It's imperative, especially when you look at the trade overseas, these new trade agreements, TPP, TTIP, we've got to work together. Too many times in the past, we've segmented ourselves or we've put ourselves in slices, and it's been the industry, it's been the crop industry, the feed grains versus the cattle feeders. We can't do that anymore. We've seen what happens to industries that eat themselves. And so, you know, the thing that I push and that I'll push my whole term as president is that never again do we eat ourselves when we go into these trade negotiations. Everybody needs to benefit from it or nobody benefits from it.
That's an excellent metaphor. Never again will we eat ourselves. So they obviously agree with you there. Wait. You're obviously involved and have been for a long time, and all the people that we're going to have on the panel are that way. But a lot of the folks out here, and you're, I'm not saying you're not in this category, you struggle with just enough time just to get the crop in the ground and just to get the crop harvested, and that runs into a conflict of getting involved in a commodity organization which we so desperately need. So how do you weigh that, as busy as you are, as these people are, and yet we need them to get more involved?
Well, you know, we're all involved because we're all out there every day. And I don't think I'm the only one that's ever sat on a tractor or the combine or in the pickup and yelled at the radio because I said, "What are you talking about, you, excuse the language, moron?" Texan popped out in me, I'm sorry.
Yes, I was with you.
But you do that, and we've all got those time constraints. But in the social age that we're in, the social media age, the vacuum in the room, when you leave a vacuum, anybody can enter it, whether they know what they're talking about or not. And the thing that I'd ask each and every one of you that's out here in the audience today is get involved. Join an organization. I'd love every one of you out here to join the American Soybean Association. And we can get you somebody down here will get you an application.
That's what your family's here for, apparently.
But I don't care how you get involved. Yep. Because if you're not in the room and you're not giving your message to the people that are making the decisions for your commodity, then somebody else is. And it may not be your issue. It may be somebody else's issue, and that's not one of the things, you know, that's how you get veered off of the main course. You know, there's 95% of the issues in ag that we all agree on.
You bet.
And we need to drive down that road and let's stay out of bar ditches.
That's another Texas term, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bar ditches. Folks, this gentleman here spends a lot of time representing one commodity group, but actually represents all of agriculture. Nice round of applause for Wade Cowan, please. Get one stare down. Our second panelist is a gentleman that runs about 1,400 acres. He's a third-generation farmer about an hour outside of Washington, D.C. In fact, we're going to hold him responsible for cleaning that mess up. This gentleman grows every commodity that's represented here today, including barley, but specifically more involved in the National Corn Growers Association. Was a graduate of their very first Advanced Leadership Academy. He's president of the Corn to Ethanol Research Center and has been the NCGA representative in several capacities, including the U.S. Grains Council and also EPA's Farm, Ranch, and Rural Community Committee. He is married, has two children. Please welcome to the stage Mr. Chip Bowling, I'll get it, the president of the National Corn Growers Association. Thank you, Chip.
Good to be here. Yeah. Did you get my name wrong?
I got your name wrong only because someone told me which was it, and I knew beforehand. I knew it was just Bowling, so it was pretty simple, but I still messed it up. So anyway, we're going to talk about several things that you're interested in, but first I have to know the weather. You've been dealing with it more than a lot of us. Have you been hammered?
We have. We've got 6 or 8 inches of snow on the ground. The river where we live is froze over, and it's been interesting.
So which has been more difficult, the snow or the temperature?
Both. We're not used to real cold
weather.
You're
a politician by nature, aren't you?
Yes. You straddle the fence.
Just straddle the fence, yeah. Wind chill factor is really cold. I'm from the Midwest, so I'm accustomed to that, but...
It has been a little windier than normal, and we can't take it. We don't like any, you know, single-degree weather.
Why did they bring up wind? Who invented wind chill factor? Is that for somebody who wants to fly kites in the winter? I don't know.
I'm not going to do that.
It was never as cold before they came up with that wind chill factor issue. But let's not talk about the weather, because we are really short on time, and we've got the sessions going on, and we've got the exhibits that everybody wants to get to. There's a lot of light, as we've already talked, that is shining on agriculture now with other groups and other entities and people, as the Secretary talked about, on the other side of the fence.
Yes.
So my question to you is does that bring more attention to the issue of the fact that we have to be more unified?
It does. National Corn Growers is 42,000 members strong, and if we can get all the other three commodity groups to work together as a group, how can we go wrong? I've learned from all my travels in D.C. that if you go in with a unified voice and you're all speaking the same language with the same message, they listen. Yep. So what better way to do it than together?
No question about that. Tell me what the Corn Growers is doing to keep demand and to increase demand of corn.
Well, it's a never-ending project for us.
Right.
But, of course, we're going to protect the RFS. We want to promote ethanol in any way we can. We're building infrastructure to promote the use of E15. We want to open our trade barriers with any country that we possibly can, and we want to partner with our livestock groups. We just don't want to supply grain to our livestock producers. We want to be their partner so that when they're doing good, we're doing good.
Right.
When we're doing good, we want them to do good. Again, we need to work together and make this work all at the same time.
Man, you had a perfect segue because I wanted to ask you very quickly. Trade's always been a hot issue in agriculture forever, but it seems hotter now. So why is that?
Well, we have more countries that need our product. Whether it's, if they buy corn directly from us and we ship it over there, or we can feed livestock and send the meat to other countries.
Right.
And other countries, their population's growing, their demand for meat and other products that we have is growing, so we're here to provide it. We've proven one thing over and over again, that we can grow corn at a record pace, and we have a 2 billion bushel carryover. It's got to go somewhere.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, another tremendous volunteer for one of your commodity groups, please. Nice round of applause for Chip Bowling. How's that?
Got it right.
How's that? Would you like to dance? Yeah, just pick a chair, any chair. Yeah. We did not rehearse this particular part of it. Go ahead. Oh, you can go ahead and sit down if you'd like there. Wait. Good. There we go. All right. So I need some family member to help this guy right here because he's struggling with a bar stool. All right, our third panelist is a fellow Kansan, and we probably got some Kansans out there, and I know most of you know this, but in Kansas, of course, we encourage Kansans to marry outsiders and to move outside the state just so we can improve the world. No, apparently not as many Kansas as I thought in the room. This gentleman is a cash grain farmer and a custom farmer from Marion County, Kansas. He began his active involvement with the Kansas Association of Wheat Growers and was their representative with the National Association of Wheat Growers in a host of committees, including research and technology, operations and planning, environment and renewable resources. He is a graduate of Tabor College with a degree in business administration. He is married and has three children, so please welcome to the stage the president of the National Association of Wheat Growers, Mr. Paul Pinner.
Paul, thank you. Paul.
Have a seat, Paul.
Yes, thank you.
And you didn't bring as many family members as Wade did, apparently.
No, I didn't. Most of my family members are actually in Minnesota. You know, that my grandchildren are there. That's where that's where their parents live.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that's right. You've got twin granddaughters.
Yes, I do. And I just had a young baby girl, granddaughter, in December.
Really? Yeah. Well, I've got twin grandsons. Are yours identical, by the way?
Yes, they are.
They are?
Yes, they are.
Gosh, I wish my grandsons were identical, because then I'd only have to carry one picture. I'd say, this is my grandson. Got another one just like him. It'd be handy.
Yeah, the boy.
Grandkids are great, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, you bet. Oh, they're, they're great.
I'm not going to bore you with a lot of grand... You know, first, I didn't know I'd like grandkids this much. I first just wanted grandkids for revenge. That was it. But then I found out how much fun they are, and I'm not going to give a lot of stories, but I do have to give you this one. My five-year-old granddaughter, last week, the ice cream truck came rolling through. And, of course, by the way, that's how you can test a child's hearing. They can hear an ice cream truck 5 miles away.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I said, do you want to get some ice cream? And this is what my five-year-old granddaughter said. No, Papa, I don't have enough money in my money jar. And so I've got to get more money in my money jar before I buy ice cream. Now, what that means is that my five-year-old granddaughter understands economics more than Congress.
I think my granddaughters do, too.
Yes.
They do, too. Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, so enough for the grandkids. Yeah. All right, there's been a lot of talk about trade. Mm-hmm. Let's bring up one specific issue. Cuba and Cuba trade, obviously, is in the news. What could that possibly mean for Kansas wheat growers?
Oh, we're talking that's an important customer that just right outside our doorstep. Mm-hmm. And so we could actually be very competitive in marketing the grain there. And the critical thing is making sure they have all the other things taken care of, you know, the credit terms and able to pay. And right. all that. Now, right. That was the restriction in the past. And now what we want to do is we want to be able to have a proper sale, make sure that we can supply the wheat. We're competitive right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I want to bring up, I don't think it's a contentious issue, but something we clearly want to talk about. Low-level presence is in the news,
yes.
has been for quite some time. National Association of Wheat Growers have supported that, even though there's no... GM commercialization of wheat. So mm-hmm. explain that for your people out
okay.
here.
Well, this is in anticipation of the introduction of biotechnology in wheat. We want to have that available so that when we do export grain, that our customers know that there is a minimum or a maximum level that's going to be allowed
right.
in you know, a grain dust that might contain some GM material. So when we do sell to customers that don't want GM in their shipments,
right.
you know that is a guarantee. What also, when we talk to customers about a policy, as we did last year, they'll come back to us and say, "Well, you don't have a low-level presence policy, so why should we expect have one?" So what we want to do is we want to move forward with the proper authorities and be able to establish a presence of 5% or somewhere in that range, what would be acceptable.
All right. And a nice segue from that topic, of course. Biotechnology, what do you see on the horizon, particularly for wheat growers?
Well, we've always been told that there's a potential maybe 5 to 10 years out for the eventual introduction of biotechnology in wheat.
Right.
What we need to do is we need to make sure that all our customers are willing and ready to accept biotechnology. We're talking to millers and bakers with regards to that as well, because they're seeing it from the supply standpoint. They're looking as declining acres are continuing to slide, like this year, 5% reduction in seeded winter wheat acres.
Really?
So they're all starting to ask themselves, okay, are we going to need to source wheat somewhere else? Well, the important thing is biotechnology could has a potential rise of anywhere from 10 to 30% potential and increase in yield. We also have benefits with drought tolerance, drought resistance, heat tolerance, heat resistance, and some other nutritional benefits. So this is all about making sure that wheat is a crop of choice for our farmers that can grow it, but also to be able to provide some benefits for the customers as well.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, nice round of applause for the president of the National Association of Wheat Growers. Well, we'll go down one chair. It's like a little dance routine every time they move chairs, isn't it? And our final panelist, an old buddy of mine, he's been up here before, a familiar face. He began farming in 1969 when he graduated from college, Oklahoma Panhandle State University, with a double degree in chemistry and animal science. Now his son farms with him. He is an Okie, not from Muskogee, but from Keyes, Oklahoma. He's been actively involved in a lot of commodity groups, including local groups in his community, school board, et cetera, et cetera. Please welcome to the stage a gentleman who's been married 42 years, so it may stick, we're not sure, the chairman of the National Sorghum Producers, J.B. Stewart. Nice to have you back.
Well, it's nice to be back. At my age, it's nice to be anywhere.
You got the memo. Yes, I was going to say, you got the memo on the boots, I see. Well done.
No.
You didn't get the memo. You're just warm.
You got it.
Okay. All right. Well, we matched.
That's
what I'm saying.
That's me.
All right. Some of this babble doesn't make any sense to anybody out there. We're just going to babble for a while here. But I am kind of curious. You and I are of the same vintage. You're one of those 60s. That's, you know what they say about people that are from the 60s. If you remember the 60s, you didn't really grow up in the 60s. You're contemplating whether you inhaled or not, I think. But
I hadn't.
You're debating that.
I'd never thought of it that way. No. Thanks for making me really feel good.
That's right. That's my job. I'm a feel good MC. That's what I am. So, JB, let's talk sorghum here for a while. There's a lot of exciting things happening about sorghum. Let's just talk about a couple of the hot issues that are on the forefront of the sorghum industry right now.
Sure. You know, and the big thing in sorghum now is our tremendous export market. My goodness, we're moving sorghum in quantities and prices that we never dreamed possible a few years ago, and it's so, you know, so totally exciting. And then we have other areas we're working in, other value-added areas. You know, we're seeing sorghum in cereal boxes on grocery shelves, and sorghum as a health food is highly touted. It's non-gluten and high in antioxidants, and just has a lot of good possibilities. And somebody told a joke down there.
Apparently, I think so. There could be a gluten person. I can eat gluten. I actually order extra gluten when I go to a restaurant because I love gluten.
And I probably said something backwards. You know, that goes back to that remembering the 60s.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. There you go. We're back.
But anyway, I want to compare, you know, our market now. It's like a rising tide. When the tide rises, all the ships in the harbor rise.
That's right.
And we're help, you know, when a commodity rises like this one has, we're helping all these others that are up here. For instance, most of our exports went to Mexico before China bailed in. Now Mexico sees value in corn at the price sorghum is. So, you know, we all have our relationships, the price relationships, and when one gets the favors, well, it helps everybody.
Well, so all those things that are happening, what does it specifically mean to the sorghum producer then?
Well, you know, it hits us where a farmer likes it the most. It affects our bottom line.
Right.
For instance, this tremendous basis that we have now. I was offered 90 cents a bushel over the Chicago corn price for corn delivered in April. Well, normally we're 20 cents under.
Right.
So that's $1.10 a bushel all of a sudden. Well, you know, corn's down $1.50 from where it was, you know, back in the summer. That means sorghum's only down 40 cents. So It's hitting the farm gate. It's hitting the sorghum producer where he likes to be hit.
Absolutely. One final question, JB. Explain the, for those that don't know, and I'm one of them, the Go for 250 program with the sorghum producer.
Yes, that's an interesting concept. In fact, we had a producer that tweeted that, Go for 260 or 250, hashtag super sorghum or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of caught on in the industry. And, historically, sorghum's been produced on the more marginal acres because it is a tough crop that can stand drought and stand extra heat and that sort of thing. But we thought, people would put this stuff on their good acres. What might happen? So that's where this Go for 250 came from.
Gotcha.
And we're excited about it. And we had a producer this year hit 246. Can you imagine raising 246 bushel of sorghum and being disappointed? Because he needed that other 4 bushel to hit it, because there's some good prizes in line for that. And I think we'll get there. We've got people talking, hey, I'm going to put that on my good land this year.
There you go.
Try to hit that prize.
So. All right. Well, JB, thank you. And folks, would you thank JB for his service to the sorghum industry? I'd now like to just toss a couple of questions out to all of the commodity reps that are here right now. One thing that has been an overriding theme the last few years is unity, particularly with we had the farm bill debate. There were some tense moments and there were some hard feelings, without a doubt. And the reason that we need to talk about that is because, as we all know, we're 1%. There's another 99% out there. And so that group sometimes is disconnected. You've been in those conversations. I've been in those conversations. I just had an argument yesterday about red meat. Yeah, red meat's bad for you. And I was on the plane. I was arguing with this guy. I said, no, red meat is not bad for you. I said, I remember my college days. Green fuzzy meat in the back of the refrigerator. That's bad for you. But there's nothing wrong with red meat. And we have the secretary talked about the issues that he deals with the GMO and so forth. So how do we close the disconnect? How do we communicate to those people that are on the other side of the fence as a group?
Well, if I could start off, National Corn Growers is part of U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. We're also a part of Common Ground, and we partner with groups that we wouldn't normally partner with to get the farm bill done, like the Sportsman's Group. And we brought the conservation groups in, and those are millions of people strong. And, when you do things like that, that's kind of out-of-the-box thinking, and you're partnering with groups that you don't normally partner with, you tend to get more done, and that's the way we're looking at it in National Corn Growers.
Very good. Paul.
One important aspect that we have is that we're grassroots-based, and I know all the commodity associations, they pride themselves in that fact.
Right.
But it's very important that, that farmers have their voice. And so as leaders of the organization, we go back to them, make sure we have their marching orders. We pursue the priorities that are their priorities. And then when we come together as organizations, there might be some differences that we work out.
Sure.
But I was really pleased how we agreed on a lot of issues. Sometimes the press always highlights the negative. But there
really?
Was...
They do that?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
But, yeah, I was stating the obvious.
Yes.
But that's the thing is, we do have some successes getting together. In fact, just the other day, we signed a letter about an issue. And so that communication between the organizations is very important, that we know that that there is that unity that comes along with it.
You bet. Yeah. Wade?
That's a big message. If there's any message that we could ever get out right now, it's so important that what happened in the farm bill in certain levels doesn't happen again. We've got to get together. We've got to work together.
Yep.
And we've got to get that positive message out. For the last month, we've been telling people in the Soybean Association, let's go out. Let's get that positive message. We're real good at preaching to the choir. Let's get out into the urban areas. Let's get out into those. And, when you get out in there and you talk to some of those people, I've been really happy. The best quote I've heard from anybody in a big city is there was a young man in a city that told me, when I was talking to him, he said, there is one thing that I really appreciate. And he said, that's that agriculture is what was really good about America. And he says, that's what's going to be good about America in the future. No question.
Wow. JB, you want to add to that?
Well, yes, I'll speak to, the disconnect that we're seeing now is somewhat discerning because, You know, throughout most of my career, the audience that I was going to as consumers were people that had spent holidays at Grandma and Grandpa's farm, and they had that nostalgic attachment to the farm, and it made our job a lot easier going to those people. The disconnect we have now, you know, they don't have that nostalgic feel, and I feel like maybe in agriculture we fell a little bit behind to being ready for that generation. What sorghum's doing, we've started a leadership sorghum program through the checkoff program. They're taking young sorghum producers, they take them clear through the industry, seed industry, production, exports, value-added markets. Nice. They do the whole thing. And we even take them to some places that they're really not comfortable at amongst people that really aren't their friends.
Gotcha.
But they need that.
You bet.
And these are the people that when they become leaders, they're going to be of that generation, and they're going to know people in the city. They're going to have friends in the city. They're going to have cousins in the city that have that disconnect, and they're going to know how to approach that. And the second thing we have to do, and we've all hit on unity, we have got to be unified when we go to that disconnected audience, or we are really buried.
Absolutely. All right, gentlemen, one last final quick question. There's a lot of excitement with Commodity Classic. There always is every time you come to this. So much information, so much new stuff to learn, people that you connect with, the networking aspect. But what one thing, after the excitement of Commodity Classic is over, would you like these people to take away from Commodity Classic? Very quickly, let's go down the row.
Well, what we would like to do is let everybody know to get involved with a national organization, be part of whatever you want to do as far as corn, soybeans, wheat, or sorghum, and take that message out to the public and to the consumers that we need to get our products promoted to in a positive way. So when you leave here and you're pumped up about being a Commodity Classic, do the same thing when you're on your plane ride home. Talk to your person sitting next to you and tell them how good we are for this country.
Wade.
I'd say that the thing that I'd wish everybody would do is find your voice. Mm-hmm. When you leave here, find that thing that's passionate, find that thing that you love, find that thing in agriculture that you think needs to be trumpeted, and go out into not only your neighborhood and talk to your other farmers, but hopefully that message can spread like a wildfire into the urban population in America, and then we won't have some of these problems that we have in Congress, because when every congressman is hearing the same message and every regulator is hearing the same message, then we're not going to have the problems anymore, because we're not going to have the regulations and the laws passed and things that we have had put upon us in the last few years.
Paul.
Well, one of the things that I know that every farm family has, there's always somebody that is not living on the farm, but they're living in an urban environment or in some city. And it only takes a short time before they get disconnected from agriculture. I've seen it in our family, and I've seen it in other families where the influences and the media is so pervasive that they can almost within a year or a couple of years' time, they can lose that message of what agriculture is about and the importance of nutrition in their own lives. And then they access media, which primarily the millennials are utilizing the media, the social media, to get their information. And a lot of it is either wrong, just outright wrong, or it's not taken in proper context. So the education starts with our own family members, but then it spreads out from there.
JB, can you cap this off?
Well, I'll certainly try to. Nearly everyone in here is a multiple producer of commodities. Yep. And I would just like to ask people, hey, we need more sorghum. We need more bushels. Instead of contributing to your higher carryout of corn or soybeans, plant a few acres of sorghum. Really, help us out here and take that message home. I mean, we think right now is the prime time for sorghum.
Unity is what we're talking about here. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, yes, we'll help you all out when you need it. Yeah, there you go. But now's the prime time for sorghum, and maybe on your farm you'll discover that sorghum is the smart choice.
I think we've
that'll bring unity if you start raising all four commodities.
I couldn't have said this or kept this any better, JB.
Ladies
and gentlemen, nice round of applause for some great volunteers for you people. Thanks a lot, guys. Paul, great job. Great job. Great job. You know, I think without a doubt that was the greatest panel we've ever had at Commodity Classic.